Hello, my friends. I wish you all are doing excellent. This is your friend, Eric Lopez, from Houston, Texas. And welcome. Welcome to the ISOCOSH podcast. This podcast is dedicated to you, my friends, who are responsible for designing, implementing, maintaining, improving, and auditing ISO standards in a way that it adds value to the business. My objective is to air real experiences that will assist you to be a better and more efficient consultant or internal coach of your organization. The principle is that whatever you do, it must support the business of your company. This is a professional community for people like you. So, welcome to the ISOCOSH podcast. Good morning, my friends. Auditing a management system is a key support for every organization that claims conformance to management system standards such as ISO 9001, ISO 14001, ISO 27001, and so many more. So what happens when the traditional way of doing audits receives a punch in the face by new, sudden, and unexpected circumstances? Yes, you can say pandemic that makes social distance mandatory, of course. Well, we just look for solutions, and this is your job, my friends, ISO coach. Remote auditing was an acceptable way of doing audits way before this pandemic. COVID-19 and social distancing just made this method of auditing more attractive, and gradually it became a necessity. ISO 9011 provides guidelines for auditing management systems. It refers three methods to collect information: interviews, observations, and review of documented information. Regardless of how the audit is conducted, either on-site or remotely, we auditors need to collect and verify information. Now, how are we going to do that in a remote audit? Well, my dear friends, we need information and communication technologies, also known simply as ICT. Today in this episode, we are going to talk about what is ICT, ICT beyond auditing. In other words, fundamentals of information and communication technologies. We will share stories and link them with current industry needs. Our guest will get us in a journey of how ICT can be selected and used to help us conduct the best remote audit possible. In order to have a value-added conversation, I invited a very well-known professional in the auditing community, Sharonda Jeffries. Sharonda serves as chair of the User Advisory Committee at the International Accreditation Forum, IAF, which encompasses the accreditation bodies of the world. She's a key leader within Quest Forum, an industry collaboration of companies dedicated to ICT, telecom supply chain, quality, and performance, and represents Quest Forum at the US TAC TC176, ISO TC176, ISO Casco Star, and the IAF. In addition to that, Sharonda is program manager at Cisco Systems. I do not know how she finds time for all that. So thank you, Sharonda. I'm thrilled that you are here this morning with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I am so excited.
I heard a webinar by Sharonda on remote auditing and I loved it. And I said, you know, I need to invite Sharonda to our community. You, my friend, who are in every corner of the world trying to know a little bit more about management systems and ISO systems and or auditing techniques, etc. So welcome. It's fantastic to have Sharonda here. Sharonda, the ISO coach is every person in the world with the responsibility in her hands to design, implement, maintain, and improve a management system. That is why now that we are using a lot of remote auditing, could you please give us context of what ICT is? How is that important? And how can we use it in the best way possible in our companies?
Okay. Well, when it comes to ICT, and it's strange because everybody's throwing that term out nowadays, ICT. And it's interesting because I like to make this statement. Welcome to the virtual world. Many of us have been in this virtual world for a while. And as you said, this is a world I've been living in for a while. Information and communication technologies, or ICT, it's really defined, and you mentioned the IAF. We've got a mandatory document. We've defined it in our mandatory document. And so I'll give you that the what I call the dictionary definition first, and then I'll give you, hey, the real world.
Okay.
So the dictionary definition is it's technology that's used to gather information, to store information, to process information, to analyze information. It's software, it's hardware. When you think about ICT, it's the smartphone you hold in your hand, it's laptops, it's desktops, it's drones. It can be wearable technology, and it also can include the solutions. And so it can be WebEx, it can be GoToMeeting, it can be those solutions as well. And as you said, we're seeing a lot of ICT used right now with regard to auditing and assessment because factories have been shut down. Many of us are sheltering in place, sheltering at home, staying at home. And so we're relying a lot upon teleconferencing, audio conferencing, video conferencing, data sharing. We're relying on still videos and tools such as Snagit, and screenshots, and all of these things. And so ICT is all of those things. It's all of that. It allows you to stay connected even when you're not able to physically be there.
These ICT tools, the context that you're telling me is they are everywhere and they were always there.
Yes. And it's interesting. Go ahead. Well, I was going to say it's interesting because they've always been around, but we didn't have to rely on them as much now. And so the statement that I make is technology truly is the thing keeping us connected. Kids are going to school nowadays because of COVID-19, because of the pandemic and the need to keep people safe. We're using technology to keep our kids educated. We're using technology to stay connected with our grandparents and our family members.
And how is the industry dealing with this? Are we being creative enough?
So it's funny because before we got started, we were just talking a minute ago and I was talking about the use of technology in education, talking about the education of the children at home. So that is, that's another industry that has really grown up very almost overnight. And so we've had the educational aspect where you've got the traditional kids go off to college concept, but we've always had the online education as well. And so we're seeing where a lot of industries, particularly in the telecom industry, my employer is telecom, in the telecom industry, we've traditionally had a lot of our employees working from home. And so we've had remote employees as I like to tell folks, I work oftentimes in what I call my satellite office. And my satellite office is traditionally any coffee shop I happen to be around. but in the telecom world, we've seen where a lot of the real estate is being left barren. It's standalone. It's no one's there anymore. And it's because even in the telecom industry, we've recognized, and I read something today in Forbes magazine that said, telecom estimates that 77% of its workers will now be completely work at home, completely work from home. Wow. And so we're seeing a shift even in organizations, even in industries where we traditionally had people come into the facility where we're saying, hey, we don't even need to do this now. So you're seeing the seismic shift with regard to industries that traditionally have been hands-on, the education, the let's send the kids to school, let's send the children to school, where they've now shifted to the online remote education. We're seeing telecom where we've traditionally embraced the use of ICT, where we're increasing our focus in use of technology with regard to how we're communicating. And we're seeing some interesting things. I mean, telehealth. In the past month, I've gone to the doctor using technology. I've actually purchased a home using technology. I got a mortgage using technology. I didn't go into an office. I signed my documents using e-sign, virtual sign. And so we're doing a lot with regard to technology. It truly is keeping us connected. What's interesting, though, is these folks, and I told you I could talk for days on this, but a lot of people, they think when it comes to technology, it's I've been doing this physically, so therefore I'm going to insert the word virtually. And so they think, I've been doing it physically, I'll take the word physical out and I'll insert the word virtual, and I'm doing the same thing. And that's not how it works. You've got to select the right technology that works for you. And so you've got to recognize, what is it I'm trying to do? And will this tool, will this solution work for me? Will this meet my needs? And so even in the education front, you've got, and I was talking about this, my daughter, she's a dancer. She's been taking an advanced dance class. And I was blown away by the innovation that her educator, that her instructor, her teacher used in converting from the real environment into the virtual environment. The educator, the teacher, she learned how to record her videos of herself instructing. She provided those videos to the students, and then she scheduled office hours with each of her students. And so she really had to think about, how do I convert from the real, from the physical, into something that will work in the virtual? And it took a little bit of difference. She actually incorporated a little bit of the real. She emailed a package to each of her students. So when she was thinking about this transition herself, she realized that she was spending a lot of time dancing in front of a mirror. And she said, well, many of my students may not have a mirror at home to practice their dancing in front of. So she mailed a mirror to each one of her students, a full-size stand-up mirror to each one of the students. And that's how she incorporated that real aspect. In the work environment, a lot of times we'll say, well, let's just insert the word virtual, but we haven't given our employees, we haven't given folks time to get comfortable, to get knowledgeable with technology. And so one of the things that I've always said is play with the technology. And so I do this with my parents. My parents, they are not technology savvy at all. But I realized I needed to stay connected with them. How do I engage my parents? How do I engage my kids, my children, so that they're going to want to connect with their parents and their grandparents? And so we set up a weekly call using technology. And how I did this was, I said, we're going to play bingo. We're going to play a game, and we'll play a game that will encourage my children to want to join. Now, I did have to incorporate we played for money. So I did have to incorporate a bit of incentive in there, but I set up a weekly call with my children, my parents. We did a 10 minute of catch up at the beginning of the call. And then we started a game. We played bingo for money, and to encourage my children to use technology, they had to establish either a Venmo, a PayPal, a Cash App account, and they would request, they would send me a request if once they won. So if they called bingo, send me your Cash App request for $2 and I will send the $2 to you.
Oh, wow. So that's fantastic.
It was a little bit of incentive there, a little bit of plotting, but it's the same type of thing we've got to do even in our factories. If we want people to use technology, we've got to figure out, how do we encourage them? How do we get them to want to play? And we've made it mandatory now with the COVID-19 and the stay at home orders. Now it's not we want to encourage. Now it's mandatory. You have to encourage people to want to use technology, because that's the only way that we can communicate now.
Yeah, I love a lot the story that you gave us on your family and how it relates to our industry. And there are two things that I hope they are connected in some way, but that I wanted to ask you is, you use a lot, and we use a lot, the word virtual. Now, I know that you were instrumental to that definition of virtual. And can you talk to us a little bit about that definition on virtual? You also mentioned that it is very important in the industry to, for your own industry, to select the right IT tool.
So let's go with that one first, and then we'll circle back to virtual. So when it comes to selecting the right tool, you've got to really think about what is it I'm intending to do. And so oftentimes, and I'll talk about what I primarily do. I primarily am an instructor, a teacher. So it's funny, I actually just wrapped up a training class last week. And so a lot of people, they think, well, training, instructing, you just need something that lets you talk. And so there are lots of applications out there that do that. There's Zoom. Everybody's Zooming. Zoom, Zoom, Zoom. Well, the good thing about Zoom and the good thing about WebEx and the good thing about GoToMeeting is they do allow the face-to-face interaction. But if you're training, not only do you need the face-to-face interaction, but oftentimes you're going to need to share a desktop. And so you're going to need to look at what slides am I using? What PowerPoint or Visio slide deck do I need to reference? So you need to look at, does the tool have that capability? Other capability that I like to have as a trainer is I like to have the capability of not only sharing the desktop, but chatting. And I like to monitor attention. And so a lot of the tools, they're going to have attention monitors now. And an attention monitor, it's nothing more than a way for the tool to say, is this screen the screen that's front and center on the desktop? And I like to have the attention monitor because I recognize that when I'm training, if I'm training virtually, I'm now competing with multiple screens, multiple pop-ups. And so you've got the bells, the ding, you're supposed to be in a meeting in 15 minutes, or you've got the ding, an email has arrived. And so I'm competing with those things. And I recognize that. So it's almost as if you're sitting in a classroom and your phone is bing, a text has arrived, bing, an email has arrived, except this is much more concentrated because it's your desktop. So I'm
you're right,
competing with that. So I like those tools that give me attention monitoring, that I like to use emoticons. And so a lot of times I'll say, if I'm doing training, I'll say, update your emoticon with a light bulb to let me know you understood this concept, or raise your hand. And so those are features that I look for. Other things that you'll want to consider with regard to some of the tools. And so in the work environment, we're seeing a lot of, as I said, WebEx, GoToMeeting, Zoom. You're going to need to consider security and confidentiality. And depending on what your application is, you may have different needs with regard to security and confidentiality. If you're talking in terms of a design organization and you're talking to those folks, security and confidentiality, it rates higher because you're talking about protection of intellectual property there.
Totally.
If you're talking about communication with your grandma and grandparent, maybe security and confidentiality, they're not so important there. Now, and you asked about the virtual site. So let me talk about that too. So when I was working at as a representative, and I'm still currently the representative for TIA Quest Forum, we were talking, and it was actually a young lady, her name is Nancy Lee. And Nancy Lee and I, we were out at lunch, and Nancy said, Sharonda, how are we going to handle it? All of our documents talk about auditing sites. And she said, what are we going to do when there's really no site? And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, think about it. Sooner or later, we're going to have organizations. And she said, wait a minute. We have organizations right now that don't have brick and mortar. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, we bank online. And I paused and I said, you know what? You're right. I haven't been to a physical bank in ages. I bank online. So it is possible that there are organizations that don't have brick and mortar. And so we started this discussion in 2004, 2003. And then we said, well, how do we define a virtual site? And we came up with a definition, and this definition is in and a mandatory document. It's IAF mandatory document number 4. And it's actually been introduced and picked up in other IAF documents and also ISO documents. And we define a virtual site as it's a site where things are performed in an online environment, where work, where activities are performed in an online environment, allowing people, irrespective of where they're physically located, to execute those activities, to execute those processes. And so it goes back to this concept of, you know, my satellite office is wherever I happen to find a coffee shop. So it goes to that concept of a virtual site, a virtual location is where it doesn't really matter where you're physically located. Now, we did put some caveats on that. We said, well, sometimes it does matter. Sometimes there are things that have to happen in the physical. And those are traditionally things where you've got to touch things. And I always joke about this. It's where you got to touch it. You've got to feel it. You got to smell it. There are some things you just got to be there. And we said, those are traditionally things like warehousing, manufacturing, where you've got to physically test. So if you've got to physically be there to touch it, to smell it, to feel it, then you can't consider that a virtual site. You can audit a physical site virtually, meaning you can audit a physical site using technology, but a virtual site, because it's not a real site, you're going to have to use technology to audit that virtual location, a virtual site.
That's very interesting, Sharonda. And let me share with you the following. Maybe you can tell me something about it. For many years, when I was doing audits on, let's say, a cement company or a offshore oil platform, so it's kind of a combination of a virtual environment as you have defined it. And I'm using your current your what you just told us about that definition, because when you get into this platform, that platform might be huge, like the size of a football field. And, but you will see that there are only perhaps 30 people running the whole show, but there is a control room with 20 screens, hundreds of sensors, PLCs and everything. And when I go to these places, like a cement company, also same thing, there's a control room, just a handful of people managing the entire operation, but everything is happening in those control rooms. If you want to be fair or effective to achieve the objectives of the audit, then a lot of your time is going to be spent in these control rooms, because the decisions are taken there. So it is a combination of brick and mortar and also like a virtual. Will that be considered a virtual environment also?
So yes and no. So the cement mixing part has to happen physically. Okay. But you're exactly right, where the control room aspect, everything is, the control room can be anywhere. Yes. As you said. So because the control room, that's as long as you have those sensors connected, the control room can physically be anywhere.
Totally right. Actually, let me specify that part. On the cement company, the control room is in the cement company. But in an offshore platform, yes, you have a control room in the offshore platform, but there is a mirror operation out there in the shore, either, mm-hmm. I don't know, Houston, New Orleans, yeah. Whatever. So how do I know if we get stuck on a traditional way of doing audits, that you interview the persons in the control room, you will know what they are checking at. They will know what whistles or lights they are looking at, monitoring. But if you really want to know what makes that safety valve to be activated, you need to understand the equation behind it and the inputs they are taking into account. And in order to do that, you need to talk to the programmer, which is not in the platform. So that's why, you know, when you were talking about this definition, I thought about that kind of environment that is not something tangible. You need to talk and to understand the program behind it. Was it validated? Even cybersecurity is very important. I mean, there are so many factors around this type of environment, Sharonda.
And so all of those questions, but it's interesting because these questions, this concept that you're applying, these are things, as you said, these are questions we've been asking ourselves as far as impacting the audit activity for a while. Nothing has changed. And so what I'm seeing with regard to this COVID-19 pandemic is I'm seeing a little bit of panic with people because they think, oh, things have got to be different. And it's like, no, it's just COVID-19 is accelerating in many cases what we've got to do.
Yes.
But what you've been doing with regard to the audit of the cement organization and the audit of the oil and gas industry, that's been how you've had to audit for a while. With the rest of the world, now we're accelerating what's happening with the rest of the world now.
And now you mentioned something also very interesting, which is the security and confidentiality, and how it will be very important for companies such as engineering, anything that has to do with designs or, you know, well, confidential information.
Protection of IP, protection of intellectual property. And so yes. I use the design and development organization because traditionally they're very protective of their designs. Uh-huh. But it's really, I mean, it can be, you know, hey, GDPR, global data protection. When you talk about data protection, you're talking about protecting contact information, contact list. It's all of those things. So it's not only just your design and development activity. Sometimes it's your customer list. It's You're those right. types of things. And so you really want to, hey, it could be something as simple and as your social security number, your telephone number. So you really got to look at how do we protect the data? And it's interesting when thinking about that control room aspect, because a lot of folks, they say, well, I'm going to bring a camera in. Sometimes you're not allowed to have a camera. And we, again, this is something that we've been talking about for a while. If you think about traditional manufacturing operations, when I worked as an auditor way back when, a lot of times they'd say, when I arrived on site, they would say, does your cell phone have a camera? If your cell phone has a camera, you can't bring that camera onto our manufacturing floor because we won't allow photographs of this type of thing, or we won't allow photographs in this area. And so when you're talking about the use of technology, one of the things you've got to think about is if it's a traditional manufacturing site, what do you need to see in order to have the audit objectives met? And what can you not see as well? So you've got to think about what do I need to see and what may I be prohibited from seeing? So sometimes you'll need to focus upon the manufacturing operation. And so you need to hone in or go in very tight and small on the build of the product without looking at the operator's face, for example. Or you may not be able to see things that are posted on the wall that you need to see. And so you've got to really think about what may some limitations be with the use of technology that could impact the objectives of the audit. And you've got to be prepared for how do I address those? How do I deal with that?
For example, in a manufacturing shop that you just mentioned, what ICT tools come to your mind that, you know, our friends could be using in any part of the world?
So I'm seeing where a lot of organizations, when it comes to the audit aspect, they're getting very creative. I'm seeing good old basic technology, such as a simple cell phone that's used, where folks are using FaceTime. And again, you're going to have to think about what's the organization, what's their concerns with regard to security, confidentiality. But I've seen cell phones mounted on harnesses. I've seen some folks use iPads and software solution along with the iPad where they are streaming, they are recording. I've seen cameras, video cameras being used. In many manufacturing organizations, they may already have camera feeds already present with regard to monitoring the lines. And so I've seen folks just tap into those existing cameras, those existing feeds that are available with regard to the line. So I've seen that happen as well. But a lot of creativity has gone in with regard to the construction of the use of carts and motorized carts and handheld wearable devices, those types of things. So seeing a lot of innovation and ingenuity there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, going back to that part of confidentiality and data protection, we can be aware, but how can we make sure we implement the right actions to actually care for that confidentiality, for that data?
So one of the things that we talk about in the MD4 document, which is the IF mandatory document number 4, we talk about the the case for identifying and documenting risk and opportunities. And we said, we asked that you really think about what are the risks that are going to be presented by the use of the technology. And so, for example, one of the risks could be if I'm using a camera, that whomever's operating the camera, they may not display everything necessary. And so the statement there is, well, how do you gain assurance that what you're seeing is actually there? And so what some industries have done, for example, if you think about the food safety industry, they're protecting the safety of our food supply chain right now. They've said, well, we want to really make sure that if we're using technology for an audit or an assessment, that the auditor has physically been to that site before. So they know how to maneuver and how to request that the camera operator maneuvers. And so that's one of the ways that they're using to manage the risk associated with not physically being there. They're saying, have you been there before? Others are saying, you may not have had to have been there before, but I'm going to require a tour. So before you get started with the audit, I want you to walk around and show me physically where all of the perimeter is located. So I can do as if I'm walking around the organization, as if I'm physically there. I've now seen the entire perimeter. Let's come back to the center. And so you're seeing where organizations are asking themselves, how can we be sure that what we're seeing is what we're seeing? How can we have trust in the technology that requires an identification of the risk and the opportunities that can be presented? I hope that answered the question.
Yes, definitely, Sharon. So what I see here is that then it is very important for the company who is going to choose or select the ICT tools that are adequate for them, a risk analysis is going to be very useful.
Yes.
And actually then, I think I can refer them, and we can refer them to the new remote auditing paper that the APG group in ISO TCS 176 published. My friends, you can go to the ISO.org website, and if you search for APG auditing practice group, you will find a lot of papers there that might be useful for you. One of them is remote audits, and that paper includes a table for that intends to provide a general, pretty general risk analysis. And but of course, make yours, but use that as a support document. And okay, and so competency of the people, Sharonda. Also, you were talking about the story that in your family, right? But in the industry, how can we achieve this? I mean, that we select the right ICT tool, but at the same time, the people involved is competent in using this ICT tool.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned the APG paper. So my friend Joanna, she leads the APG team. And so I'm really glad to hear you mention that, because that's something I know I try to promote the IF MD4 and I try to promote APG as much as I possibly can, the auditing practices group. When it comes to the competency, one of the things that we joke about is it's not just, hey, let's go do the audit virtually. Insert the word virtual.
Yes.
You've got to get familiar with the tool. You've got to get comfortable with the tool. And so I'm a true and firm believer in playing with tools first. So you want to play with the tools as much as you can before you've got to use that tool in a real situation. And when I say play with the tool, you want to simulate. You want to simulate what you're going to be doing. You want to play with that. One of the things that I'm doing right now to help myself get more familiar with breakouts, because I don't use breakout rooms with regard to Zoom and WebEx. I don't use those as much as I should. And so I'm playing with the technology. So here's what I'm doing to make myself more comfortable with breakout rooms. I'll be hosting an event soon for a group. It's a cooking class. And so we're going to have a chef show us how to cook. We're all going to be in the main room with the chef. Everybody mics off. We're listening to the chef.
Okay.
And then we're going to break out. And it, I think there are going to be about 100 of us. And we're going to break out into 10 breakout rooms. So 10 people in per room. And after cooking with the chef in the main room, we're going to break out to have dinner with 10 of our closest friends.
Oh, wow.
In the breakout room. And so I'm using that as a way to get myself more familiar with the technology. So ultimately, I'm going to want to use breakout rooms in my training. But before I use it in training, I've got to play with the technology. And so that's what I do. I play with the technology first. But we've got to give our auditors, especially our auditors, the time to get comfortable with the technology, the time to play with the technology, the time to simulate. When I first got started with my employer, I was a diehard. I've got to do training there. If I'm training an auditor, if I'm making an auditor, I've got to physically be there. And now my training is 100% via WebEx and telepresence. 100%. I went from a diehard, I physically got to be there looking at them in the eye, nose to nose,
I know, yeah,
to 100%. Yes. I just wrapped up a training class last week where I had 20 people in that training course. And it was amazing to me because they were dreading it. Oh, when I tell you they were dreading it, it was a 5-day training course. And I had them allocate 4 hours per day for training. So they showed up day one going, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm doing a 4-hour training course. And I said, that's not how this is going to work. No one can train for 4 hours. No one can audit for 4 hours. Here's what we're going to do. We'll train for 35 minutes. We'll take a 10-minute break. We'll come back. We'll start again. We'll train for 35 minutes. We'll take a 10-minute break. We'll start again. And I said, and it won't be consecutive because I'm going to give you assignments. And again, I need to get more familiar with the breakouts because I could have done breakouts. But what I would do is I'd say, we'll conclude the training now and you'll go do the work on your own. But it was the most interesting thing because what I've done is I have case studies in my training. And the case studies, I'm simulating an audit. Remember, simulating the real. And so auditors take notes. And so how I simulate the auditors taking notes is they are emailed a case study and they've got to highlight as if they're taking notes. And so we play a video, we read the case study, and they highlight as if they're taking notes, and then we refer back. And so if they haven't highlighted something, then it's obviously not in their notes. Okay. So they can't refer back to that.
Yes, yes. That's very creative.
Well, but that's the thing, using technology. So it's not just inserting the word virtual. Mm-hmm. It's using creativity. It requires more work, more thought.
Yeah.
And so that's the part that auditors are going to have to recognize. Using technology, especially initially, it's going to require more planning.
Mm-hmm. Excellent, excellent. That's the next concept that I wanted to talk about, planning. Sharon, this planning is not only, it's about identifying the risks, selecting the right ICT tool, and something that I have found. Okay, so I've been auditing certification bodies as well, according to 17021-1, and doing those kind of. So I've seen that some variation on the way they are doing remote audits. Some of them are giving a lot of time and a great part of the audit time to document review before facing the remote audit. So that's interesting to me. So when you're talking about this planning of before doing the remote audit, what aspects of the planning you're talking about?
So the planning, you've got to really think about the fact that traditionally you audit for an 8-hour day. So that's the first thing.
Yes.
it's almost impossible to do an 8-hour virtual audit sitting in front of your desktop talking to a computer. That will drive anybody nuts.
Okay? Yes,
you're right. So you're going to need to think about how am I going to, and I use the term chunk, how am I going to break up, how am I going to chunk up this 8-hour audit day so that it's something that's palatable for the auditee and the auditor? Because sitting in front of your laptop for 8 full hours, that's not feasible. That's not doable. So you're going to need to think about how am I going to schedule my audit interviews? How am I going to handle the transition time between audit interviews? Because there's nothing more rude than joining an audit interview, joining a GoToMeeting or a WebEx or a Zoom, and hearing someone say, and the final nonconformity for your area is.
yeah.
And so you'll need to schedule what I call buffer time between the interviews. Okay. So you'll need to schedule, say, what's normally a 1-hour in-person interview. You may want to scale that down to 45 minutes and have a break between when you schedule your next audit interview. And you may want to, instead of having a full 8-hour day, spread the audit interviews over multiple days. So this is something that we've got to think about with regard to the planning. The other thing is basic logistics. If you're auditing virtually, if you're auditing using technology, you may be physically located in one part of the world and the organization that you're auditing is in another part of the world. So I joke about this. My day traditionally starts at 6 a.m. because I'm working in a global environment. My day may end at 9 p.m. or sometimes 2 a.m. because I'm working in a global environment. And wherever the sun is, that's where the time is with regard to when I schedule. So I don't schedule my audits with regard to my sun up, sun down. I schedule the audit with regard to where the organization, where the auditee is located, and it's scheduled for their sun up, sun down.
Sharonda, I think that what you just presented to us, I loved it very much. The virtual environment, the confidentiality and data protection, the measures that we have to take into account when doing an audit, the competency of the people. Regarding data transfer, regarding access to confidential information, because as when doing an audit, for example, you were mentioning before how critical it is that when we are auditing, let's say, an engineering specification, something that they, an equation that they are using to justify the type of material or the dimension of something, that's IP, that's intellectual property. So how have you seen that companies, I mean, auditing companies and audited organizations are agreeing to the terms confidentiality? How is the normal way they are agreeing to these terms?
So I've been talking to some of my friends in the audit world, and a lot of times they have confidentiality agreements already in place because they're already visiting the facility. But I've seen some that have said, we've needed to revisit our agreements with our clients because things are different now. And so they are reevaluating the confidentiality agreements as far as what can and cannot be shared. I've seen some of the organizations that I've engaged with, they've really started thinking about limitations with regard to screenshots. Because in the past it was, can I get a copy of that document?
Yes.
Now it's the noise.
Yes, I can hear that. Yes.
It's, can I get a screenshot of that? Yes. And so I've seen organizations now where they've had to think about what will we allow screenshots of and what will we not allow screenshots of? Mm-hmm. How are we going to handle that? Will you have to have cameras on so that we can see you and see where your eyes are? I've seen all kinds of discussions going on right now with regard to enhancement of existing agreements and actually discussion with regard to new requirements too.
you know, I'm thinking about all these very, you know, small companies all over the world that, you know, might want to have some reference and
well, the small companies, I'm seeing them use and rely on the FaceTime with regard to the FaceTime streaming. Yes. So I'm really seeing some really innovative uses of technology in the smaller companies.
Is there anything that you would like to add on ICT tools?
So the only thing I'd like to add is you heard me say that I really encourage people to play with the tool.
Yes.
I would like for folks to get familiar with it. It's not, I know I joke about this in a webinar that I did, but a lot of us in the auditing field, we've been around auditing for a while. And so we've been around auditing for a while, but we may not necessarily be comfortable with tools. We may not be comfortable with ICT. And so the more we use it, the more we get familiar with it, the more trust we'll have in it, and the more creative we'll be with it. And so I think it's that play with it. I think it's that use the technology, do different things. We're hearing folks say, I'm zooming, I'm WebExing. Well, do different things with the tools. You heard me talk about the cooking class that I'm doing. What have I done since we've been on COVID? You heard me talk about the fact that I've bought a house, got a mortgage, I've been to the doctor. Well, do those things, try those things. You heard me talk about my daughter and her dance class and how she's using dance with the mirror and doing that remotely. Bingo with my family. The more we use technology, the less frightening it is, the more we understand better the risk and opportunities, the true opportunities that it can present. Because in using technology, maybe we can select more samples, or maybe we can select better samples. Who knows?
Sharon, I love your stories and your presentation. You are a leading professional working on several international organizations for standardization. And thank you very much for your contribution to all these ISO coaches in every corner of the world. I do appreciate it, Sharon.
Thank you for having me. Okay.
Okay. Sharon, I love your clear-cut presentation on information communication technologies. I do. My friends, let me tell you the following, just a few final remarks. Yes, we need to make sure that the audit objectives are achieved, either on-site, remotely, or a combination of both. We must pursue the audit objectives. ICT tools will give us that opportunity, but then we should be aware of how important it is to select the right tools. In this conversation with Sharonda Jeffries, I gathered that a risk analysis will be a good start to begin considering the most appropriate ICT tool for a specific audit. The selection of the ICT tools is going to be influenced by the internet connection performance, communication platforms, confidentiality of protocols, safe management of data, compatibility of the hardware and software, competency of the people, type of environment, brick and mortar or virtual environment. So many factors are involved in here, and a risk analysis will help you to select the best combination of ICT tools to achieve the audit objectives. For now, I'm grateful that we had an excellent presentation, Sharonda. Thank you very much for your contribution to all our ISO coaches in every corner of the world. I do appreciate it. Thank you.